Cantrell, is it?
Yeah. I expect if you had been anywhere near the fighting in Missouri and Kansas during the war, you'd have heard of me, all right.
You'd have heard, all right.
Pryor paused to cast a disparaging glance in Doc's direction.
Well, Mr. Cantrell, what is it you wanted?
What you got? How many men you got working this spread for you?
Enough to get the work done, so if you're looking for work, I'm not hiring right now.
Now, I don't see no cause for you to get your back up all like that. I don't work for nobody. I replace people. Your crew, for instance.
Convinced now that he was having a conversation with an insane man, Pryor sought to end it abruptly.
Well, if there's nothing else, I'm kind of busy right now. Like I said, I don't need any more men.
Oh, you're lucky me and my men came through this way. Why, we can run this place so you won't even have to hit a lick. You may have some ranch hands and know how to wet nurse a calf. Anybody can do that, but we'll handle any trouble that comes this way. Engines, rustlers, anything. And take care of that cattle, too. Bob there will see to it.
Mister, my business with you is over. Now I'll ask you to kindly get on your horses and get the hell off my land.
Zeke Cheney got up from the floor and walked over to the door.
Who's in the house?
That's no concern of yours. Now, I've asked you politely to get off my land. I don't want to have to call my men from a barn to escort you off.
Oh, hell, call them. Me and my boys would enjoy meeting them, wouldn't we, boys?
Bring them
up. Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Like to meet them.
Yeah, let's see them.
Unbeknownst to all, standing near the window in the front room, Juanita had heard the brazen confrontation going on outside on the porch. After listening for a few minutes, she had hurried into the kitchen and out the back door to summon her husband from the garden. Emilio, upon hearing Juanita's concern for her boss, knew that he must act to come to the aid of Pryor. He had chose to back up his boss with a shotgun. He sent Juanita to the room, then began a slow, cautious easing along the side of the house toward the front porch, hoping the men would leave before he reached them, sparing him the need to take action. But Mace Cantrell had other plans.
Look here, Pryor. I've been hearing a lot about how much money you got hid out somewhere. Word has it that you bankrolled the whole damn town. And from the looks of this little piece of shit house you're living in, I figure sure as hell I ain't spent none of that money on it. Me and my men need that money more than you do. So things will go a hell of a lot smoother if you just show us where the money is hid. If you behave yourself, I might even let you keep some of it.
So we're finally getting down to it, are we? You're nothing but a gang of thieves, and you've got some crazy idea that I got a lot of money hidden around here. If you had half a cup of brains, you'd know that any sum of money I had would be in the bank in Helena. That is, if I had any left after backing the saloon and the General Star. You're just out of luck, Mr. Cantrell. My advice to you is to ride on out of here before I call my men.
You got a bad mouth on you, mister. You think I'm dumb enough to believe that? Helena's a hell of a long way from here, and I expect you've got a payroll to meet every month. We could have done this the easy way, but I got time to do it the hard way. I want whatever money you've got in this house, so you might as well come up with it. Lacey here is going to shoot off one of your fingers every time I ask you where it is and you don't tell me. When you run out of fingers, we'll start on your toes.
Sufficiently terrified, Pryor took a step back toward the door, only to feel Zeke's hand on his shoulder.
I swear, there's no money here but about $50. I'd be a fool to keep any large sums out here.
Mister, you're trying my patience. If I don't get what I'm after pretty soon, you're gonna find yourself in a heap of pain.
Thoroughly enjoying the harassment of Raymond Pryor, Doc glanced toward the corner of the house and a shadow caught his eye. Curious, he turned his attention toward the edge of the porch, easing his .44 out of the holster. As he watched, the shadow moved even farther beyond the corner. The others were so engrossed in tormenting the trembling ranch owner that they didn't notice when Doc slowly raised his pistol and aimed it at the corner of the porch just as Emilio eased around the corner, shotgun raised. stock slug slammed into his chest. The other, startled by the gunshot, searched frantically for the source of the attack.
Look out, boys! You're gonna get shot!
With all guns out of the holsters now, two of the outlaws moved quickly to make sure there was no one else behind the house.
He's dead. Now, damn you, Doc. You could have given us a little warning.
Doc grinned, pleased by the reaction. But Mace was not amused by his brother's quick action, because now a warning had been sounded to alert any of Pryor's men who might have been within earshot.
Damn it, Doc. We might have not had to shoot him yet. Might have helped us turn up the money. You and Junior get on the other side of the porch and keep your eyes peeled on that barn.
Pryor stared at the lifeless body lying in the dirt, struck dumb by the senseless murder of his hired hand.
Emilio.
Mace grabbed Pryor by the collar.
Who else is in the house?
Pryor was suddenly rendered fragile and dazed. Mace spun him around and shoved him through the doorway of the house.
Let's see if we can help this poor feller's memory. We might have a fight on our hands sooner than we expected. Bob, keep your eyes open. There's somebody down in that barn or in the bunkhouse, and right about now they're making up their minds what they're gonna do.
Mace prodded Pryor between his shoulder blades and followed him into a hallway that ran the length of the house, where he found Pryor's office.
Now we're getting somewhere.
He spied a small safe next to the desk. He gave Pryor a violent shove.
Open that damn safe.
Pryor fell to his knees before the safe. Without hesitation, he dialed the lock and opened it. Mace grabbed the back of Pryor's collar again and spun him out of the way, eager to discover the contents himself. Still dazed, Pryor sank back against the wall next to his desk, staring at the monster in his house, while Mace scattered documents of various business dealings around in his search for treasure.
Where is it?
Then he spied a metal box under some notebooks, and he knew that was what he was searching for. Pryor was slowly regaining his senses while Mace fumbled with the catch on the metal box. He realized then that the outlaw's complete attention was on the cash box. He wouldn't get another chance to act. With fingers trembling, he reached up and eased his desk drawer open and reached inside. The cold, hard feel of the revolver under his hand gave him the courage he needed. Mace dropped the cash box when confronted with the ugly barrel of the pistol aimed directly at him. At that moment, he knew he was a dead man. There was no time to go for his gun. Frozen in death's doorway, he could only wait for the fatal shot. The explosion of the .44 shook Mace to his soul, but there was no pain. Instead, a round black hole suddenly appeared in Pryor's forehead. Then he pitched forward.
I believe he'd have shot you.
Bob Dawson slid his pistol back in the holster. Shaken by the near-death encounter and furious for having been caught off guard by the insignificant little rancher, Mace reacted by drawing his .44. Three more bullets slammed into the corpse.
Damn you, you sneaky little son of a bitch!
Dawson was only half successful in holding back an amused smile, but he knew better than to push it.
Find anything?
Who's watching that barn?
That's what I came in to tell you. Ain't nobody showed their nose out of that barn yet. What do you want to do?
That means there ain't but one or two men down there. If there was more of them, they'd be charging up here to see what the shooting was about.
Cantrell turned the metal box upside down to empty the contents on the desk. He snatched up the money and hurriedly counted it out, hoping the small pile of bills was of a large denomination. It wasn't. Pryor had not lied.
$48 damn.
Mace turned to aim a scalding sneer in Pryor's direction as if the pitiable little corpse had cheated him.
$48? Is that all there is there?
Oh, we'll tear this damn place apart. He's bound to have more money than that hid out somewhere. Maybe in the barn.
Mace, we got company.
Oh, come on!
They hurried out to the porch where Junior and Zeke were waiting. Chaney pointed toward the barn.
Three of them.
Three men on foot were heading their way. One of them in a cook's apron.
Me and Bob and Doc will sit here on the porch and wait for him. You three go on around the back of the house.
As Curly and the two other hands approached the house, he caught sight of Emilio's body on the blood-soaked earth, and he went for his gun. Mace turned to face his brother.
Send Bob and Lacey down there to make sure there ain't nobody else hiding out the barn or the bunkhouse. The rest of us will tear this damn place apart. He's got some more money hid around here somewhere.
He paused again as he thought about it further, and then he amended his orders.
I don't want to be surprised by none of the rest of his crew showing up suddenly. Send Junior and Zeke out as lookouts. About a quarter of a mile, one of them north and the other in south. We want to be ready for them when they come in this evening and come help me search this place.
Glancing briefly at the corpse slumped against the big oak desk, Mace nodded his head in satisfaction. It was like old times when he was riding with Quantrill and Bloody Bill. The blood spilled this day made him feel whole again. The past few years had been hard on his sense of power, as well as his ego. On the run for much of the time, chased by lawmen and deputies. But now?
Now I'm back on top.
There may or may not be a large sum of money hidden somewhere on this ranch, but there was a defenseless town waiting to be plundered whenever it suited him to move against it. Once he and his men took care of the remainder of Pryor's crew, he could take his time to gut the place before attacking the good people of Paradise.
Well, ain't this here pretty little sight? Let's have a look at you, honey. Well, look here what I found, Mace. A little old mouse hiding in the corner.
Get rid of her.
Oh, Mace, can I keep her? Hell, I found her.
More pragmatic than lustful, Mace was in no mood for dallying with a woman.
You'll be more trouble than she's worth. When we're done with this place, I don't want to leave a living soul.
Well, she could do some cooking for us, and I'd keep an eye on her.
That thought caused Mace to pause for just a moment before repeating his orders to his brother.
Get rid of her.
Doc was just about to plead for at least a few minutes with Juanita to answer lustful urges that seldom saw an opportunity for satisfaction. Before he could speak, however, they were joined by Bob Dawson and Lacey.
I heard screaming. You holding out on a woman?
It wasn't nothing. What'd you find down there?
There ain't nobody down at the barn or the bunkhouse.
There are 7 bunks being used down there, so there's 4 more out there somewhere. Well, looky here.
Dawson stared at Doc and his prize.
What you got there, Doc? You might as well back off. She's mine. I found her, so you boys can just step back while me and the little lady go into the other room.
I'll be damned.
Lacey caught Juanita by the arm.
Ain't none of us got any more rights than the rest of us. Besides, you don't know what to do with a woman like that anyway.
Hold it!
Mace stepped in front of Lacey and calmly drew his gun.
No! No! Please, no!
Damn, Mace! What'd you have to go and do that for?
Because we ain't got no time for you jackasses to fight like a pack of coyotes over one old Mexican woman.
Mace replaced the spent cartridge.
Now, we got 4 ranch hands that might be riding in any minute. I want to be ready for them when they show up. Take care of them short and sweet.
The disappointment in his brother's eyes caused Mace to offer a word of consolation.
There's bound to be more women in that town. Maybe you can find you a younger one. That'd be all right, wouldn't it? But first, let's just get set up for them other 4.
I was wondering if anyone was going to show up to drive these cows back towards home.
Jason Storm greeted the 4 riders who had just descended the East Ridge. He nudged Biscuit forward to meet him.
Hello, Jason.
Sam Bradford removed his hat, wiped his brow, and parked his hat again.
Curly sent us over to clear them out of this river bottom before you decide to drive them over to your place.
Well, you're just in time. I was fixing to do just that.
Boyd Nixon piped up.
We was talking about you the other night. We hadn't seen hide nor hair of you in weeks.
We was wondering if you decided to head out for parts unknown.
Oh, I reckon I just been busy trying to keep my little spread going. You know I'm pretty new at this cattle raising business.
The truth of the matter, which Curly and the boys had already figured out, was that Jason had come to the valley seeking solitude, and he preferred to keep to himself. Like the others, Boyd figured Jason Storm was riding away from a past. Good or bad, he wasn't sure. And to be honest, it didn't matter as far as he was concerned. Raymond Pryor had decided the quiet stranger earned the right to make his way in this wilderness, same as anybody else. Raymond Pryor was a damn good judge of men.
I reckon we best round up these strays if we're planning to get back by dark.
That's a fact. We get back too late, notice is liable to throw the chuck to the hogs.
I'll give you a hand. Ride with you as far as Blind Woman Creek.
Much obliged.
With five men to do the job, it didn't take long to get the 40-odd cattle moving. They were soon headed south toward the high ridge that separated Blind Woman Creek from the river. When they reached the creek, Jason said goodbye and followed it up toward the mountains. He glanced back at the four men driving the cattle around the northern end of the ridge. They were good men. All Pryor's crew were good men. And almost every one of them lent a hand when Jason built his cabin and barn. He felt a little guilty for not being more neighborly, but he was certain that they knew how much he appreciated their help.
Well, maybe I ought to ride over and pay him a visit. So maybe we'll do that in the next day or two, Biscuit.
The execution of Raymond Pryor's last four crew members came off as easily as Mace Cantrell envisioned. Not a single shot fired in return.
Well, boys, looks like we got us a ranch. This little battle is all over.
Intoxicated by the smell of gun smoke, he took a moment to relive the glory of his war years. There was no denying. It was something he had always known but never openly acknowledged. Slaughter drove him. The spoils of robbery were satisfying, sure, and necessary for survival, but the killing of men created the power that one man had above all others. At this moment, Mace could feel that power. He could do anything he wanted to, and nobody could stop him.
What do you reckon we ought to do with those bodies?
Doc broke into Mace's reverie.
Drag them into the barn. After we finish tearing this place apart, we'll burn it to the ground.
The other bodies had already been stacked inside Raymond Pryor's front room.
We'll sleep in that bunkhouse tonight. Zeke and Bob can cook up whatever they find in the kitchen. We might as well enjoy ourselves before we ride into town. I'm thinking we might as well take a day or two to make sure there ain't no money hid around here, and then we'll march on to the town of Paradise.
Well, there's a hell of a lot of cattle scattered around this spread. Worth a lot of money.
Well, what do you want to do about it? You want to go into raising cattle now? I sure as hell don't plan on looking after no damn cows.
I'm just saying.
Doc silently scolded himself for seeming to always make stupid statements. Young Tom Austin propped his pitchfork in the corner of the back stall he'd been working in when he heard horses approaching the front of the stables. By the sound, he determined it was more than a few horses, which aroused his curiosity. He could not help but feel a sense of concern when he got to the stable doors and recognized the group of riders pulling up in front. It was that same sorry-looking bunch that had ridden through town before. And this time, each of the six men led a pack horse.
Can I help you fellas?
Yeah.
Mace Cantrell stepped down from the saddle.
You can take the packs off these horses and give them some grain. We'll be back later and you can take care of the ones we're riding in.
He continued to fix the young man with a studied sneer.
Ain't you the deputy sheriff? Seems like somebody told me you was.
Yes, sir. I'm the deputy in my spare time.
In your spare time. Where's the sheriff? Is he in town today?
Oscar? No, sir. He ain't here, but His farm's only half an hour ride from here.
Austin subconsciously took a step backward as Lacey and Doc urged their horses forward to stand on either side of Mace.
I expect you'd best go fetch him, sonny. Or we got some business to discuss with him.
Well, I reckon I could go get him if you don't think it's something I can take care of.
Confronted with a situation that he had no clue how to handle, Tom was not sure what to do. One thing that did register in his mind, however, was the distinct feeling that the ominous-looking gang facing him boded ill for the town of Paradise. His reply was met with nothing more than the amused leer of Mace Cantrell.
I'll saddle up and go fetch Oscar. I'll go get Mr. Pice to take care of your pack horses.
Yeah. Tell the sheriff to come to the saloon. I'll set up my headquarters there. Come on, boys.
His headquarters? I better go out and tell Mr. Pryor about this.
Mace led his gang up the street. He studied each business they passed to evaluate the likelihood that the owner might be inclined to resist the takeover of the town. The only possible threat he saw might be the blacksmith, who stopped to stare openly at him as they passed. The rest of the small community he estimated to be harmless. The town wasn't big enough to stand up against six hardened outlaws. The only real businesses were the saloon and the general store. He discounted any threat from the doctor, the barber, or the owner of the stable. Doc rode up beside his brother.
What you figuring on doing?
Like the others, he wondered why Mace had sent for the sheriff.
Why don't we just knock over the saloon and the general store and get the hell out of here?
We will, but we'll take our time about it. I got my reasons.
Doc didn't push the issue further, although he knew the other men felt the same as he did. Hit and run had always been their style. But Mace had fallen deep into one of his dark moods ever since they failed to turn up any hidden fortune at Pryor's Ranch. It was never a good idea to bother him when he was brooding over something. Doc wouldn't understand Mace's reasons for lingering in Paradise had he even been told. His simple mind lacked the passion for conquest that drove his brother and the feeling of power he sought over the entire town. Though tiny and vulnerable, Paradise would be his, if only for a short time. Gus Hopkins glanced to the door, then turned to his boss, Ben Thompson.
Uh-oh. Here's them fellas I told you about. I was hoping we'd seen the last of them.
Well, just treat them like any other customers.
Mace ignored the two men standing behind the counter.
All right, Zeke, you and Junior, pull a couple of them tables up here close to the door so as we can see what's going on outside. We're gonna need something to eat, too. Bob, why don't you and Lacey go next door to that store and see what you can scare up for food?
Only then did Mace turn to the two astonished men at the bar.
I expect you've got a cook stove in the back room somewhere.
Mister, just what in the hell do you think you're doing? You can't move in here like you own the place. I'm the owner of this establishment. Now you can put those tables right back where they were. If you and your men want to buy a drink, we'll be happy to serve you. Otherwise, you can clear out of here now.
Mace cast a patient smile in Ben's direction.
What do I think I'm doing? I'm taking over this saloon is what I'm doing. Well, you got any objections?
You're damn right I've got objections.
Doc here handles objections. Take care of the man's objections, Doc.
Gladly.
Doc pulled his .44. Gus was rendered motionless for only a second before reaching under the counter for his shotgun.
Go ahead and pull it if you want the same as your boss.
Gus froze.
Look behind that counter, Doc. See how many guns he's got here back there.
Mace turned to Gus.
You could be useful to me if you behave yourself. We're gonna need somebody to do the fetching for us.
He cocked the hammer back on his pistol.
But it's up to you.
Gus looked down, wide-eyed and shocked, as his boss lay helpless on the floor. His eyes searched desperately for help from some quarter. Ben clutched his bleeding stomach, trying to sit up against the counter. When Gus started to reach down to help him, Mace motioned him away with his pistol. Hesitating, Gus could plainly read the wrenching pain that racked Ben's body.
What's it gonna be? You gonna throw in with us, or get the same as he got?
There was no choice for Gus but to agree to go along. Facing six desperate-looking killers, he knew he was standing on the edge of his own grave. There was nothing he could do for Ben Thompson, his employer and friend.
I reckon I ain't got much choice.
At least until he got a chance to run for it. Tom Austin was going to be here at any minute, Gus thought. He was bound to have heard those shots. What Gus didn't know was that Tom was on his way to Oscar Perkins' farm, having already been confronted by the raiders.
I can tell you for certain you made the right choice. Cause I'd just as soon blow a hole in your head as not.
Taking his attention away from Gus for the moment, he turned to Doc.
Maybe we need to get the pack horses where we can get to them in a hurry if we need to. Why don't you take one of the boys and go down to stables and fetch him? We can tie him right behind the saloon.
Doc nodded and motioned for Zeke to help him.
Might as well bring a couple of sacks of grain, too.
This wouldn't take a whole lot of getting used to. It had always been Mace's nature to take what he wanted. But this time it was different. It was the first time he had ever had the luxury of owning a whole town with everything in it his for the taking.
And Doc, drag this son of a bitch out of here. He'd die outside.
Gus stood helpless as Ben was dragged outside, feeling considerably less like a man for not trying to help his employer. But knowing it amounted to suicide if he so much as made a move in that direction.
Well, I guess old Doc decided your boss wasn't dying fast enough.
Tom found Oscar Perkins at the end of the field that bordered the road to town, almost at the same spot from where Oscar saw the six riders pass some days before.
Damn, Tom, you look all lathered up.
We got trouble in town.
He hurriedly related the events that saw the gang of six outlaws descend upon paradise.
They're an ugly bunch, and they talk like they're taking over the whole damn town. They said they needed to talk to you.
Oscar was immediately gripped by a cold hand on his insides. He remembered the six riders vividly.
What do they want with me? Have they broke any laws?
Well, not so far, but there ain't no doubt in my mind that they're planning on something. And you best get into town before things get out of hand.
Oscar didn't respond for a few minutes while he searched his soul for courage. The clear picture of the six men remained in his memory as he glanced from Tom's worried face back toward his house beyond the field.
I didn't take the sheriff's job with any notion to stand up to a gang of murdering outlaws. I told Raymond Pryor I'd try to keep an eye on things, but I ain't got no qualification to go up against six gunmen.
Well, are you saying you ain't gonna go?
That's what I'm saying.
You're the sheriff. That's your job. I'll be there to help you.
I'll tell you what my job is. My job is to take care of my family. And who's going to do that if I go and get myself shot up by a gang of murdering outlaws? No, sir. If you want to get yourself shot, go ahead. But I ain't that crazy. I got a family to think about.
Tom sat for a long moment, then turned his horse and rode out of the field, his mind a whirlwind of confusion and indecision. After a few moments more, though, he realized what he should have done in the first place. He could form a posse with Curly and the crew that should be a match for the six outlaws, and to hell with Oscar Perkins. With that in mind, he set out for Raymond Pryor's ranch. Jason was still a couple of miles away when he thought he detected the faint smell of burnt timber. There was no cause for alarm in his mind. He figured Pryor had Curly and the boys clearing out some brush along the river to provide better access to the water. It was not until he gained the crest of the East Ridge that he pulled Biscuit up short, startled by the devastation in the valley beyond. Nothing but still smoking timber stood on the foundations of the barn and the bunkhouse. Even the main house lay in cinders on the ground. The only thing still standing was the corral, with only the rails next to the barn singed in black, some burnt almost in two. A single horse stood beside the corral, saddled, with the reins looped around a corner post, but no one else was in sight. It was hard to believe what his eyes were telling him. Nudging Biscuit with his heels, he started down the side of the ridge. It was only then he spotted the man standing next to a charred corner post of the bunkhouse. He pulled up again and drew his rifle from the saddle sling while he took a long, hard look at the man. He recognized him as someone he had met in town, but it took him a few moments' thought to remember him as the young deputy sheriff. He put his rifle back and guided Biscuit on down the slope. Standing at the corner of what had once been the bunkhouse, Tom Austin stared with eyes wide in disbelief at the blackened ruin that had once been Raymond Pryor's crew. He had found four bodies in the barn, all burnt beyond recognition, and he was still trembling from the shock. So far, he had discovered no more of Pryor's men, no bodies that he could see in the bunkhouse.
Where are the others?
Within a period of a handful of hours, the world had turned upside down, and Austin didn't know what to do about it. There was no doubt in his mind that the brazen gang of outlaws in Paradise were responsible. His thoughts were interrupted then by the sound of an approaching horse. His first instinct was to run for his rifle. He turned and sprinted toward his horse. After a dozen or more steps, however, he recognized the rider as Jason Storm, a loner who had built a place up on Blind Woman Creek. He stopped and waited for him to approach.
What happened here?
I ain't really sure. I just got here about 20 minutes ago, but I'm pretty sure I know who did it.
He pointed toward the remains of the barn.
There's four poor souls burnt up in the back of the barn, and I ain't looked in the house yet.
Jason took a moment to look around him at the grim devastation of a once working ranch, now the site of what appeared to be a massacre. It was almost too much to believe. How could someone do this without any sign of opposition?
You say you know who did this?
Tom nodded. Then he told him of the arrival of the gang of obvious outlaws and the fact that they wanted to find Raymond Pryor's ranch. Then he told Jason about their reappearance in town several days later, this morning, with the blatant attitude of running roughshod over Paradise Valley.
They sent you to fetch the sheriff?
That's right. Only Oscar said he wasn't going in against them. Said it wasn't worth risking his neck.
Jason wasn't surprised to hear of Oscar's reaction.
I'm gonna take a look around.
Jason turned his horse toward the barn. He spent a few minutes looking at the four charred bodies, then moved around the back and sides of the corral.
Well, this explains how they all went down without a fight.
He tossed an empty cartridge shell to the young deputy.
Some more of these on the ground on the other side. They were bushwhacked, like shooting fish in a barrel.
He turned to head for the house.
Well, let's see if we can find the rest of the crew. Damn.
Jason separated the last two bodies, Pryor and his housekeeper, Juanita. As best as he could remember, every man who worked for Pryor, as well as Pryor himself, were all accounted for. He glanced briefly in Tom's direction when the young deputy suddenly needed some fresh air and hurried out of the ruins.
There'd be something wrong with you if this didn't make you sick, Tom.
Though his stoic expression didn't reveal it, he was sick inside. In all his years riding for the U.S. Marshal Service, he had never witnessed such carnage short of an Indian massacre. If Tom was right, they were up against a mean bunch. A gang that didn't mind killing, and one that meant to destroy the whole town of Paradise. To this point, this tragedy hadn't threatened him or his little place back on Blind Woman Creek. Whoever was responsible for this murderous attack had not touched Jason personally. Still, these people, especially Raymond Pryor, befriended him, welcomed him, even going so far as to provide him with a seed stock to start his own herd. He couldn't help but think of the fate of the people of Paradise at the hands of a wild band who would commit atrocities like this. Thinking of the deputy standing now at the edge of the porch, he made his way out of the tangle of burnt timbers.
So, I reckon you're the only law in town now. What are you aiming to do?
Tom shook his head in bewilderment. It was a question he had already asked himself, with no answer forthcoming.
I ain't sure. I reckon it's my job to do something.
Jason studied the young man for a moment. At least Tom considered it his responsibility to represent the law. Jason had to give him credit for that. But it was obvious that Tom was hardly experienced enough to even consider going up against the like of Mace Cantrell and his murderers. The fact that Tom allowed Cantrell to send him to fetch the sheriff was evidence enough of the young man's lack of experience. Jason then thought about the situation in Paradise Tom had described, with Cantrell telling him he was going to set up his headquarters in the saloon. He could only speculate, but Jason guessed the outlaw had no intention of slaughtering anyone else until he bled that town dry, or someone dared to oppose him. Then, there might be another slaughter like the one here at the ranch. He felt a reluctance to do what he knew he must. When he came to this valley, he had intended to finish with his violent past as a lawman. But the pitiless violence of a lawless breed found even this remote fledgling community of peaceful folk. Searching the young deputy's face, he knew Tom might have the courage enough to attempt to stop the takeover of Paradise by this gang of killers, but he would probably pay for it with his life. There was only one person left in all of Paradise Valley to face the invaders, Jason Storm. There might be time to prepare for some action if he moved quickly. There were bodies to be buried, but he had no intention of taking the time to do that now. It was going to have to be done later.
Is there anyone in town you can count on for help?
I don't know. Joe Galt, maybe?
The blacksmith was a solid man who gave the impression he would stand his ground.
Ben Thompson, maybe Gus, and my boss, Arnold Poss. I reckon that's about all. Wouldn't expect anything from Hatfield or the doctor.
If Jason could count on their help, that would make six, counting himself and Tom. From similar situations in the past, he knew that more times than not, some backbones would turn to jelly when faced with the business end of a drawn pistol.
You know for sure that this bunch in town did this business here?
Well, no, not for sure. I mean, ain't nobody seen them do it. But there ain't no doubt in my mind about it.
Long years as a lawman made Jason think about this for a few moments. Paradise had a jail. According to Tom, this gang of outlaws had not actually committed a crime as yet. That is, that anybody witnessed. If they were the vermin responsible for this massacre, extermination would be a just and fitting reward for their deeds. But what if they didn't do it? There was the possibility that they were just a rowdy bunch of cowhands who made a noisy entrance into town. He would need to satisfy himself on that before taking any final action.
I'll be going back to my place now. I need to tend to a few things and pick up some extra cartridges before I go to Paradise to look the situation over.
What do you want me to do?
Tom looked at Jason, ready to turn his responsibility over to the formidable man who seemed to have calmly taken control.
My place is a day's ride from Paradise. I'll start back tonight. Why don't you go on back and meet me at the stable in the morning? I ought to be there before noon. See if you can talk to those men you mentioned about helping out.
Jason turned to step up in the saddle. Then he turned back to look at the deputy.
And Tom? Might be best if you stayed away from that bunch till I get a chance to see what's what.
Early the next morning, Jason had put his cabin and his weapons in order, then saddled Biscuit. Lowering the rails in the corral, he had let his stock out to roam free. He was not sure what he might run into in paradise, but he wanted to make sure his animals were free if something happened that kept him from returning. At about a quarter to noon, Jason Storm rode into the stables at a slow walk. He found Tom and Joe Galt talking to the stable owner, Arnold Poss.
Hello, Jason. This here's Joe Galt.
Tom nodded toward a short, broad-shouldered man holding a double-barreled shotgun. Galt made no response, but he looked Jason over carefully.
And this is my boss, Arnold Poss.
Poss stood there, shaking his head.
Oh, Tom told me about poor Mr. Pryor and his men. It's bad, really bad. And I'm afraid the same thing is going to happen here.
It's already started. They shot Ben Thompson right after I left to fetch Oscar. And they're holed up in the saloon. Gus is in there with them, as far as anyone can tell.
Joe Galt seethed.
They're pretty much doing whatever they want. Hatfield locked his doors this morning, put up the closed sign. A couple of them just kicked the door in and helped themselves to anything they fancied. Hatfield said one of them even tried to grab Lena, but she ran out the back door.
Where are Hatfield and his wife now?
Damned if I know. They just took off for home, I reckon. Left the store and everything, running for their lives. Can't say as I blame them. Fred wouldn't have been able to put up much of a fight against that bunch.
Well, I reckon that's the best thing for all of us to do. These men are hardened killers. And without Pryor's crew to protect us, we have no choice but to run. Let them ransack the town and be done with it. Then maybe they'll leave. There's no sense in anybody else getting killed. I know Doc Taylor is staying, but he ain't likely to be bothered anyway.
We could use your help, Arnold. I never figured you'd be running.
If we had a ghost of a chance against those outlaws, I'd stay. But we ain't. Killing and robbing is their business, and I ain't willing to lose my life for the sake of this little town. There ain't no hope for us now, since Raymond Pryor's dead.
Gauging the backbone of the owner of the stables, Jason figured Poss was going to be of little use. The help that Tom Austin had speculated upon was reduced to three of them, and Jason was trying to decide if Tom and Galt could be counted on when the situation got hot. Well, they could at least watch his back. Galt looked like a man who was not afraid to stand up and fight, and Tom, though inexperienced, was willing and taking his responsibility as deputy to heart. Jason's concern in that respect was to keep the young man alive. The odds certainly favored Mace Cantrell in a shootout. There was no sensible way for the three of them to mount an assault against the six outlaws holed up in the saloon. It was going to take some other approach.
I need to take the measure of the men we face. I'm going to the saloon to see him for myself.
Galt looked Jason dead in the eye.
Are you crazy? They'll shoot you down just like they did Ben Thompson.
Maybe, but I need to see what I'm dealing with. They don't know me from Adam. I'd just be a drifter that stops in the saloon for a drink. Besides, from what you tell me about this Cantrell feller, I expect he might want to take a little time to impress me with what a big man he is.
It's your funeral. But I don't think you got a chance in hell in coming out on your feet.
Well, if I don't, you and Tom better put your heads together and decide what you're going to do after that.
What we got coming here?
Zeke Cheney leaned against the saloon door jamb, idly watching the dusty street outside. Mildly curious, Bob Dawson walked over to see what had attracted Zeke's attention.
Maybe we got us a customer.
The two men watched the stranger approach.
Big fella. Maybe he's the sheriff.
Since May sent the deputy to fetch the sheriff, they had not seen hide nor hair of either.
He's coming in the saloon.
Hey, Mace, there's some Jasper coming in.
Cantrell looked up from a plate of beans and bacon.
Well, let him come on.
Like Zeke, Mace considered the possibility that this was the sheriff finally making an appearance. The man who appeared in the doorway moments later was not what Mace had expected. When he had entered, he had to duck his head slightly to keep from knocking his hat off. Jason took a long look around the room, making note of where everybody was, especially wary of anyone who might be in a position to put a bullet in his back. Glancing at the two standing on either side of the door, he affected a broad smile.
Howdy, boys!
Saloon open?
Watching him closely, Mace eased his hand off the handle of his pistol and resumed his assault on the plate of beans and bacon Gus had cooked for him.
Why, hell yeah, it's open if you got money.
Well, I reckon I got enough for one drink. Been riding all morning, need to cut the dust in my throat.
Jason avoided eye contact with Gus, who was staring wide-eyed at him from behind the bar.
We thought you might be the sheriff.
The sheriff? Nope, I ain't the sheriff. I'm just passing through, saw this place, thought I'd get a drink of whiskey.
His curiosity aroused, Mace got up from the table and walked over to the end of the bar.
Gus, pour the man a drink.
Gus was clearly confused. Fixing the bartender with a steely gaze, Jason slowly shook his head. Gus had seen Jason only once, but Jason was a man you did not forget. He understood the look and held his tongue.
Much obliged. We shot a ride. We'll do just fine.
Where you headed?
Mace motioned for Gus to pour him a drink as well.
Nowhere in particular. You own this place?
I own the whole damn town.
Oh, well, if you own this place, then you'd be Ben Thompson.
Ben Thompson?
While the two men sized each other up, Gus was inching away from the bar as casually as he could manage. He figured Jason stormed to be a dead man, and while everybody's attention was drawn to him, he decided it was in his best interest to slide out the back door. He'd been watched pretty closely most of the time, and this was his first opportunity to think about escape. Mace had to think a moment to remember the slain saloon owner's name. He grinned then.
Oh, Ben Thompson! Oh, yeah, he passed away. Rather sudden-like, lead poisoning, I think.
As Junior laughed, he turned to cast an inquisitive glance in Gus's direction as he eased toward the back door.
May said to fetch more wood for the stove.
Gus paused near the door. Junior wasted no more than a second's glance upon him before shrugging and turning his interest back to the broad-shouldered stranger. Gus went out and quietly closed the door behind him before heading down the alley at a dead run. Jason had seen all he needed to see, and he'd measured the depth of evil in the leader of the pack of murderers. The other five were representative of the hundreds of pitiless gunslingers he'd faced over the years as a deputy marshal. There was going to be no easy solution to Paradise's problem. Thoughts of arrest and trial were off the table. He was judge and jury, and his job called for extermination. He saw what he was up against, and he resigned himself to ridding the town of this plague. He figured he owed it to Raymond Pryor. In addition, he considered it any man's duty to rid the world of scum like Cantrell and his gang of cutthroats.
Well, I best be on my way. Well, how much for the drink?
Well, it's on the house. What's your hurry?
Before Jason could answer, Zeke signaled from the doorway.
Well, now looky here, Mace. There's some folks in a wagon.
Jason walked to the door with Mace and the others, their interest shifting from him at the moment. Outside, a man and a woman on a farm wagon pulled up in front of the general store.
I'll take care of them.
Well, me too. I always wanted to be a store clerk.
Junior hurried along after Zeke, his motivation triggered by the farmer's wife. The rest of the gang remained to return their attention to Jason. There was something about this stranger that caused Mace to be a bit wary of him, especially the way he had positioned himself at the bar so that everyone in there was in his field of sight. It was almost as if he was prepared to draw that .44 he wore and start blazing away. But now, the stranger walked out through the bat wing. Mace was very interested in seeing that man mount up and ride away, ending any further speculation on his part. Jason nodded toward Mace, standing just behind the bat wings.
Much obliged.
Jason turned Biscuit's head toward the end of the street and rode off at an easy lope. But his concern and interest remained with the man and the woman on the wagon. they had picked an unfortunate time to visit the general store. Obviously, the news about the town's capture had not spread to all the farms in the area. Under the circumstances, he could not very well have advised the couple to stay on the wagon and drive out of town. He was worried about the treatment the man and his wife might receive from Cantrell's vermin, but he'd had no choice but to ride. At the wagon in question, John Swain climbed down, then he helped his wife from the wagon seat. When she was on the ground beside him, he turned and noticed the door stood open, even though there was a closed sign hanging on it. He didn't ponder the thought, finding it only curious. Rosanna Swain, a childless woman of 32, looked forward to visiting with Lena Hatfield, the treat she was able to enjoy infrequently. She had developed a fond affection for her husband, who was 15 years her senior. But John was not a man of many words, and Rosanna needed the relief of a visit with Lena. For that reason, she was at once disappointed when she stepped inside and didn't see her friend. Looking hurriedly about the store, she was suddenly struck by the disarray of the counters and the shelves behind it, not at all typical of the place. It was only then that she took sharper note of the two men who preceded her. At once, she felt a cold shiver run the length of her spine.
"Where is Mrs. Hatfield?"
John walked in.
"She and her husband don't run this place no more."
Like Rosanna, John sensed immediate danger. His instincts told him to exit the store at once.
"Come on, Rosanna. Fred and Lena ain't here. We'd best leave now."
Junior stepped up close to Rosanna.
"Well, now, there ain't no need to rush off. We can take care of you. Give you everything you need. Ain't that right, Zeke?"
Zeke closed the door behind him.
"That's right. Maybe even more than you need."
"We'll just come back later. Come on, Rosanna."
Junior continued leering down into the frightened woman's face.
"Maybe Rosanna don't want to go. She's a right pretty little lady. She might want to stay here where she can get what she needs."
He looked up at John.
"You can go if you want to. Or you can stay and watch the fun. Hell, we might even let you in on it. You can go third. Right, Zeke?"
Junior made a sudden lunge toward the frightened woman, but she was quick enough to jump away from his clumsy attempt to grab her.
"Woo-hoo! Now you might as well make up your mind you're gonna get rode, because it's gonna happen."
Zeke stepped over beside her husband. He stared down in John's face, daring him to do something about it.
"Maybe your daddy's thinking about stopping us."
She's my wife. And I'll thank you to keep your hands off of her."
"Your wife? Oh, well, goddamn. Oh, good for you, old man. Well, then I reckon it ain't nothing new to you, so you won't mind going third behind Zeke and me, will you?"
"I expect the party's over for you two."
The voice came from the end of the counter. Startled, all four turned to discover the formidable figure poised with a .44 handgun leveled at the two outlaws. Zeke and Junior knew they were looking into the face of death. Both men reached for their guns. Jason dropped his pistol back into the holster.
"Quick, come with me."
John balked slightly, still confused.
"Move!"
Taking Rosanna by the arm then, John did as he was told. He was afraid not to.
My team and wagon.
"They're already gone."
The ominous situation of a few minutes prior had been distraction enough to prevent John Swain from realizing that Tom Austin had quietly led his team of mules toward the stables. By the time the fatal shots had been fired, Tom was almost at the stable door. Out the back door and down the steps, Jason hurried the frightened couple along.
"Your wagon's down at the stables. Get on it and get out of town as fast as you can. There's gonna be a lot more shooting around here pretty damn soon."
He turned back to watch the back door of the store.
"Mister, I don't know where you came from, but you have my thanks for what you did."
Jason shifted his gaze only slightly.
"You're welcome.
Now get that lady out of here.
Of course.
Suddenly, Doc and Bob emerged from the back of the saloon, drawn by the sounds of the gunfire. Standing in the alley behind the buildings, the big stranger who had just left the saloon waited with his gun drawn.
Hell's fire!
Their first reaction was to shoot, but stumbling all over each other on the small stoop, their shots went wild. Jason quickly returned fire. However, with no time to take careful aim, his shots, though not as wild, only tore chunks of wood from the door frame around the two men.
Son of a bitch!
Doc and Bob scrambled for the open door of the general store. With no intention of taking on the other four while standing out in an open alleyway, Jason made a quick retreat toward the stables. He'd been lucky to trim the odds by two, but he could no longer count on surprise as an advantage. The question now was whether the four outlaws would come out after him or decide to stay holed up in the saloon. Tom met him at the entrance to the stable.
They came and got their horses. You reckon they're planning to leave?
Jason didn't answer at once. He saw John and Rosanna Swain still there.
I'd advise you to waste no more time here.
He turned to Tom.
I don't think that bunch is planning to leave town until they've taken everything they can carry.
In spite of his insistence that they leave immediately, Rosanna walked up to him to look into the sun-bronzed face of the man who had saved her from savagery.
Can I ask your name, sir?
My name's Jason Storm, ma'am.
Well, Jason Storm, I just wanted to know the name of my guardian angel.
She went up on her tiptoes and kissed him lightly on the cheek.
Thank you, Jason.
She quickly turned and joined her husband, who was waiting to help her up onto the wagon. Jason stood dumbfounded, his cheeks still tingling from her kiss. He could think of nothing appropriate to say, so he remained silent as he watched them drive away. But thoughts of another woman came to him. She reminded him of Mary Ellen, the last woman to kiss him as she lay on her deathbed. She didn't favor Mary Ellen in the face. It was just something about the way she walked up to him, like a lamb confronting a wolf. He turned around to find Tom and Joe Galt watching him expectantly, waiting to be told what to do.
I killed two of them in the store, so that leaves four of them to deal with. I think they'll come looking for me. As I see it, the best place for you to take cover is under the riverbank.
Since the town was laid out in a single line of stores along the course of the narrow river that they fronted, that position would afford them the advantage of being able to cover the entire street.
I'll work my way up across from the saloon.
All right.
Jason knew the young deputy felt it was his obligation to be at the heart of the matter. It was Jason's opinions the outlaws would more likely come out the back way, planning to work their way along the back of the buildings, looking for him. For that reason, he planned to move up from the stables to meet him. He turned to Joe.
I reckon a spot across from your forge is as good a place as any for you. Let's go.